No entity of 212, complex.
DPS, go. Inco, go. PUS, go. Surgeon, go. Booster, go. Copy that, we have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome once again to the Talking Sound podcast, the only podcast on the internet where negative 10 is a number to be desired. Coming at you live from the throbbing heart of rock and roll that is Austin, Texas, I am Chris Jordan, your host, and today on the Talking Sound podcast, we're going to get a little, I guess, introspective on it and really talk about the concept of professionalism. Where does that concept come from? How do we consider ourselves, when can we consider ourselves an actual professional in this industry of audio, video, lighting, stage work, everything involved with live production that we know? When can we fully consider ourselves a professional in this realm? And that's kind of a personal question, but at the same time, it's really not. To say it's a personal question, I guess, kind of ask people to give their story, kind of give their background a little bit, you know, owning a business, owning my own production company and having my own website and stuff. I get some resumes, and we've had some resume episodes on here before talking about the importance of a good resume. And of course, a good resume is what sets you apart from everybody else in the industry. But really, it's your gigs. It's your gigs. It's your performance. And whenever you're looking at things like that, what you're really looking at is time, especially whenever you're looking at a resume. If you're seeing the fact, let's just take an audio engineer, for example. If you're seeing the fact that within 1 year or 2 years, this engineer has worked at like 10 different clubs, I don't really, that either means that A, they are spending one night at a club a week and they're doing 10 different clubs, or they have been hopping from club to club, venue to venue, trying to kind of find a place that fits them, find a place that works. And, you know, is that necessarily right? Is that necessarily good? Is that necessarily professional? And, you know, a lot of professionalism comes down to the true commitment. I was just on the phone yesterday with a very, very good friend of mine out in California, musical partner, business partner. We've had a few things going together and trying to get him on the show, trying to get him to come on. But we were talking about, you know, recommending people for work and how it's almost that Donnie Brasco mob concept of I'm not going to vouch for nobody, man. You know, I'm not going to vouch for anyone. And it's not necessarily the sake of you wanting the gig instead of them. That's not it at all. It's the fact of your reputation now rides on their professionalism. And if their professionalism doesn't shine up to the professionalism that the people you're working with are used to, or that they're used to getting from you specifically, whenever you're the engineer, then is that somebody that you should be professionally recommending? And I guess what it comes down to is knowing what makes a professional, knowing what makes a good engineer, be it a push engineer, you know, someone who pushes and loads boxes, someone who loads trucks, unloads trucks. There's a skill set involved in that, believe it or not, on how to put the load inside the vehicle, all kinds of stuff. And then on top of that, you know, how long has somebody been operating equipment? Have they operated it in the capacity in which you're talking about? Have they operated it in that? And what it comes down to, like I said, is time on the job. And you can have a degree, and a degree is great. I don't personally hold a degree. I'm 41 years old. I've been doing this stuff since I was about 14, in technical theater, things like that. So, and even before that in theater, you know, building sets, doing lighting design, all that kind of stuff. And that was in junior high. I was very fortunate to have a school that had a very active theater program and put on productions. But not everybody has those opportunities. And what it really comes down to is time on gear and time in the field. And there's an old equation that came about of 10,000 hours. And, you know, there's 10,000 hours is what builds a professional. And that's what trade schools used to go by, things like that. And really, if you break it down, here's the way it breaks down. If you look right here on screen, you've got 365 days in a year. You subtract 104 weekend days from that. So that's 2 weekend days, Saturday and Sunday, 52 weeks a year. So that's 104 out of 365. That leaves you with 261 work days during the year that are not holiday, things like that, all right? So on average, you're going to have about 260 work days during the year. And at 8 hours a day, if you go out and you ply that trade, 8 hours a day for those 261 days, you come up with 2,088 hours, okay? That's 2,088 hours in 1 year if you're doing 261 days. That's 5 days a week, 8 hours a day. That is doing this full time. All right. So if you're out engineering or doing audio or something like that, 8 hours a day, every day for 5 years, once you take that 2,088, multiply it by five, you end up with a remainder over 10,000 of 10,440. So you actually have a few buffer days in there to sit back and relax. Probably actually about, it looks to me to be about 88 days within that 5 years that you have to be leisurely and not really do your work during that 5 days a week. But if you're working at it 5 days a week, full time, 40 hours a week for 5 years, you end up with 10,000 hours. And that's where the concept of professionalism comes from, the inside the box. That's why I keep doing that. It's the inside the box definition of professionalism. And you know, not everybody has the opportunity to do that. I'm not going to say that you shouldn't do your best to find said opportunities, that you shouldn't do your best to put yourself out there. I will admit the fact that a lot of my time was spent in the home studio, what you see behind you. This is far different than what I started off with, folks, all right? I started off with a tiny little Radio Shack 4-input mono mixer, Tascam 414 4-track, and about 3 rack effects. And that was my system that I recorded with. But what it did was it gave me availability with gear on hand to at least get principles down, gain structures, gain versus volume, that kind of stuff. It gave me a working knowledge of signal flow, patching things together to make different things happen, finding the weak points in line, hearing a crackle and finding out if it was a cable or an input, that kind of stuff. Those are the things that are invaluable, that though you may go to school for it, and we've talked about it before on here, and we've actually talked to schools. We've talked to Jeremy Dudman, who teaches at the Art Institute for recording. We've also had a distance episode with one of their classes, with one of their ASE classes and or AES classes, sorry, audio engineering school classes, talking about this stuff and talking about how even though you are working at it at school every day, that doesn't quite cut it. You've got to get out. You've got to get your hands dirty. You know, you can read about it in a book all day. The reason why I excelled over the people that I was in recording class with for the little while that I did it was because I already had this base knowledge. I wasn't coming into it blind. I wasn't coming into it never having seen the gear or touched the gear. I had at least read about the gear. I knew about the gear. It was gear that I dreamed of. It was gear that I dreamed about owning. Quite a bit of it's in these racks now. But to actually get yourself to the point of focus is what's important. Because if this is something that you want to do, you will find the time to do it. And I've said that on this podcast. I've said that on my Dudes and Beer podcast. Whenever you want to do something, whenever you are actively trying to do it and you are putting forth effort, the universe will see that and it will reciprocate. As long as you aren't doing anything harmful to yourself or others, or detrimental to those reputations, yourselves or others, the universe should be fine with whatever you're putting out there, and it should be catching whatever you're throwing, and actually be supplying you with these opportunities. Now, the trick is to see the opportunities and take them. I myself, a guy that we've interviewed on this show numerous times, Alan Cunningham, shout out to Alan Cunningham out there in Houston at Double J Studios. And, you know, he was the one who heard my music on the radio and was like, hey, you've got some potential. I like the way you engineer. Would you like to learn live engineering? And I had done some live engineering on small scale, you know, powered mixers, things like that. He was the one that taught me to come out and plug in compressors and insert channels and run a 32 input console and, you know, crossovers on the amplifiers. He kind of took my knowledge and put it to the next level. And inside of that time, I'd also done video editing and taken an internship for a couple years doing that. So all of these things incrementally added up to that conglomerate 10,000 plus hours that after 5 years of doing it and doing it fairly full time, where I had a job. For some of that time, I didn't have a job before I moved to Maine. But as soon as I moved to Maine and started doing it, I had a job that was pretty well full time. I worked a good 30, 35 hours a week. But then I also engineered 4 nights a week, 5 nights a week at the venue and over at the Ale House. Shout out Ale House in Portland, Maine. All you who know what it is, when it used to be there. But, you know, doing that, doing the shows that I did with Carolyn Wonderland and Spoonfed Tribe and that kind of stuff out at Last Concert Cafe in Houston before I moved to Maine, I was doing 3 shows a week and engineering them, 2 of them on my own, 3 of them on my own. One with Alan, typically, over at the Last Concert Cafe. But I engineered our band, and I engineered Carolyn Wonderland, and the, my God, they just left my head. The Hightailers on Thursday night. Sorry, guys, the Hightailers. And that is really where my training started. That's where I was on my own 5-6 hours a night with the sound system and doing it 18-20 hours a week. For a couple years before I moved to Maine, for about 1.5 years or so. And then once I moved up there, started engineering about 3-4 times a week, and rapidly it became 5 times a week. And that rapidly moved up the chain to where, yeah, I was engineering a lot. I was out in clubs a lot. I was engineering for bands privately, things like that. So the numbers really started to add up. And within about 4 years, I had surpassed that 10,000 hours. And at that point, by that point, I was ready to go out on my own. I'd been encouraged to go out on my own with a business. And thank you, Russ Reisman, up in heaven for that. You were the one who pushed me to be self-employed. You were the one who said, despite everything that's happened, you should be able to do this. You are talented enough to do it. And it was a big leap, but it was the first time that I could say that I was a professional. I had put in the time to actually learn this craft, learn this skill, hone myself, hone my trade to the point of being able to full on have a business card and with confidence say, yes, I can do your show. And with that came the confidence of calling myself a professional. I guess that swagger that you get on stage, you know, that you get around a venue, stuff like that. You know, it's kind of like musicians when they recognize other musicians at a show, you know, just by how they're looking at gear and stuff like that. Like, oh yeah, you know, what do you play? We engineers recognize other engineers by the way we're looking at gear, by the way that we're looking at the stage, by the way that we're listening and, you know, just small movements, in the head and the way that we're listening, things like that. And it's a camaraderie, it's a brotherhood. And while you do want to recommend your friends for gigs, you do have to be wary. You do have to make sure that that professionalism that you have set up for yourself, and this is any industry, folks, this is web design, this is photography, this is videography, filmmaking, directing, writing, teaching, doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Everything about your professionalism must come through with the people that you hire. And like I said, believe me, I know a lot of people that do this for a living. And there's a lot of people that I would never hire to be a part of my crew. And it's nothing personal. It's not that I don't like hanging out with them. It's that some of the things that I see on site, some of the things that I see from them, are not necessarily personally on my professional level. And I wouldn't want that to come through or translate to my client. Like my buddy was saying, he was like, it did worlds for my relationship with this guy that I put somebody on the show with who not once but twice jacked up shows. Whenever I found out, you know, I called him up and I apologized. And that did more for our professional relationship between the two of us that I called him up and took the time to say, dude, I am sorry that guy tanked your show. And then to have to say it again, dude, I'm sorry that guy tanked your show again. It's hard, man. It's hard. And it's one of those that, you're only as good as your last gig. You're only as good as your last recommendation. So if whoever does something in your name completely and utterly messes it up, even if your name is mentioned in casual conversation amongst the industry, the conversation may go something like, you know what? He's a great guy, but the last person that he sent to do this gig for me totally skanked it up, and it was bad. Like it turned out to be a bad nightmare gig because of it. And that's nothing on your performance, but it's on the performance of the people that you put on the gig. And that's where the professionalism comes in. With that 10,000 hours, with that 5-year time span, comes the concept of, pardon the French, the bullshit meter. And whenever you hear these key words, whenever you hear people just rambling off jargon, but they don't know simple instructions whenever you give it to them at a gig, that's really where you have to be like, whoa, meter's getting up there. Meter's starting to peak a little bit. We're getting into the red of the BS meter here. It's tapping the red now. And you really do have to learn to see that technical professionalism meld with the personal professionalism on the job site. You really have to see that click. And that's where the 10,000 hours, I mean, quite honestly, that's more of the training that I got in 10,000 hours than anything else, was learning how to handle musicians, learning how to handle my clientele, how to handle a show, how to handle the stressful moments, how to be able to put people at ease when the stage is literally on fire in the middle of a show. And you're like, you know what? Don't worry about it. We're going to be able to get this done. Let's just get the flame stomped out, the embers calmed down, and in 10 minutes, we'll have the show back up and running. Don't even worry about it, you know, and trying to be able to keep that calm, cool, professional head, because that's really what it comes down to. That's what people are looking for, is the confidence. They're utterly, utterly looking for the confidence in you and in your actions. They are looking for the reassurance of the fact that who they have hired is the professional that they said they were. And I see it so many times from people who've been in the industry for years, years and years, 20 years even, just as long as I have. And they get so rattled. They get so scared whenever something goes wrong. They're flustered. They're, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And that translates, man. That comes through. That seeps into the room unavoidably. And unfortunately, negativity on job site is more contagious than positivity. you know, think about it. If you walk into a gig and the first thing that somebody tells you is they're walking off to break, setting up scenic, is, oh my God, the PM for this show is an absolute nightmare. He's awful. And you haven't even met the guy yet. All right. So you have no frame of reference. But the first thing that happens in your brain is, oh crap, man, I guess I better prepare myself for an absolutely horrifying day dealing with the PM on this show, dealing with the project manager and somebody who apparently just doesn't get it. And is just willy-nilly doing things all over the place. And there you are, actively putting a judgment on a situation that has not even happened yet. You're already thinking negatively about a situation in a show that is not, you ain't even plugged in cable one, and you're already negative about it. And I'll admit the fact I'm just as guilty as the next, especially, you know, because I'm a freelancer. You work some of the same shows every year, you know, and unfortunately you work some of them because, well, they just pay you really well. And the check comes on time and it's for a good amount and you're not going to pass up the work because, hey, it's dead time right now. And this gig happens every year. But man, is it a nightmare. And I just went through one of those recently. It was my second year on the gig. I worked with the same company that put on the gig twice last year, once for that gig, once right after. And the gig the first year was horrifying. Like literally, the project managers or the breakout leads for breakout rooms were literally showing up drunk every day and giving us the wrong equipment to push all the way across the hotel to find out when we get there that's not what's needed to push it all the way back. It was bad. And this year I was asked to come in and do the gig and I was like, man, and the guy booking me for the gig was like, I understand your hesitance. Here's the thing. Those people are no longer there. They have asked us to provide that position. Would you like to be the breakout lead? So I said yes. Because I knew the people above the breakout leads, and I knew that they were on par, and I knew that they had their stuff organized and together for the whole flow sheet for the week. They weren't shotgun and shooting from the hip like these other guys were every day in a drunken, sullen rage of having to be at work while they were hungover. But the gig ended off going great. It ended off going great, and I've gotten a good amount of work off of it since because it went off great, because we were able to take care of the client, make sure that they were happy, get things done on time in a good amount of time, even with the issues with staff and local labor, things like that. So you know, it's really hard being professional. It's very hard because we do what we do, and when you're with the right people, they just trust you. Sometimes that trust takes a long time to earn, you know, but sometimes there are some people that whenever you work with them, they're like, hey man, I brought you in. I assume the fact with your rate and your experience that you're a professional, and I expect you to be able to handle your stuff. Here's your list of things. I'm not going to hawk over you and make sure that you're doing what you need to be doing. Let me know if you have an issue. And they cut you loose and you go out and you do your gig. And it's great. I love that. But it takes a long time to get to that point. And it really does take a lot of trust. It takes a lot of trust on behalf of the client. It takes a lot of trust on behalf of you toward clients that you've never worked with before. And even if you have worked with them, if you've had a bad experience, it takes a lot of trust to get over that bad experience and treat this gig, treat these days as a totally separate situation from what's happened in the past. You've got to remember that this gig is not this gig, okay? It's a different gig, maybe the same project manager, but hey, maybe last year he was moving into a house, and this year he's settled into his house, and he's loving it, you know? It's hell closing on a house, things like that. So these things change, these dynamics change. They change from year to year. The important thing is your professionalism and consistency in professionalism. And don't forget, you spent a lot of time doing this to become a professional, okay? Not a weekend warrior, not someone who does it for fun. Make sure that you get your rate. Make sure that you get a fair rate. The rate that I go with, quite honestly, whenever I move to a new market or anything like that, is whatever the average stagehand rate is, plus 1 year for each year of experience doing it. So I've been doing things, I'm not going to reveal my rate, but my rate is the local Austin rate plus the 20 years that I've been doing this. That's my going rate. So that's how you figure that out. And, you know, whenever you do figure that out, whenever you do come to the point of finally calling yourself a professional, remember, treat yourself like one. Treat yourself like one. Carry yourself like one. It's good. It's okay to joke around. It's okay to have fun in games. It's okay to play. But watch the language, man. Watch the cursing around clients. You know, there's a difference between a stagehand and an operator. And the operator is the one that's going to be there with the client all day, days on end. So you really do have to learn that self-control, that focus of I'm here for this job. I'm here for this reason. Whatever I do in my spare time is my spare time. Until then, I'm on the clock. I need to do what the client needs. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to let them walk all over you. That doesn't mean that you have to do things that are above and beyond the call of duty. You know, you don't have to completely redesign somebody's PowerPoint unless it's your job to design PowerPoint that day. All right. But that's part of professionalism. Sometimes you take it above and beyond. You know, sometimes, hey, we've got 30 minutes. If you need to reformat the size of this PowerPoint, let's do that real quick. It'll take 5-10 minutes. Let's take care of it so that your show goes off the best possible. And that's the professional touch. That's the lasting touch. That's the touch that whenever you do that for somebody, whenever you take that extra time with the musician on stage, you know, there's nothing worse than being in a club, being a musician, showing up with your gear, and the sound guy is not there yet. I prided myself on the fact that whenever musicians showed up, that microphones were placed and ready for the first act. They were already there, so it was like mics for the drums were tucked back behind where the drums were, and once the drums were set, we put them on. You know, I was there, I was actively waiting for the band to show up so that they felt comfortable with that. They didn't feel rushed at that point. You know, you've got to just, and, you know, for me, it's showing up extra early because it puts me in that calm zen atmosphere. It gives me a chance to make my production area the way I want it, to set up the flow of things the way I want it in front of me during show, where I don't have to think, I can just push, you know. And it's so important. It's so important. Don't charge the client for it. Get there 30-40 minutes before your call time and just find your zen, find your area, find your zone, you know, get things ready. Get yourself mentally prepared so that when it does come go time, you're a calm cucumber. You have had time to, if you were there the night before, maybe house ran over a couple cables and you have to retape them. Maybe you have to replug a microphone because it got unplugged. You know, things like that, all kinds of stuff happens. And to run in and be late, to run in on a 20-channel input night and have 3 channels go bad, it happens. You turn on a board, channels go bad sometimes. And there, out of 24 channels, 3 just went bad and 2 are already bad. And where are you going to repatch things? Now you're in a rush and it shows to the band that you're working with and it shows to the people that you're working with. And that just exudes across the venue, that exudes across the stage, that brings that to bear on the situation and can really cause an inadvertent cascade in the morale of a show, which you really don't want. You really don't want. Because like we said at the beginning of the show, you're only as good as your last gig. You're only as good as the last thing that anybody knew you were a part of. So you want to try to make every gig shine as much as possible. And the only way to make every gig shine as much as possible is to make yourself shine as much as possible. That means be clean shaven, look nice, crisp, clean shirt, you know, be ready, be in the mindset to work, show up ready to work, not ready to goof off and hang out. Things like that are the immediate cues that a production manager is looking for. They're looking for eye contact. They're looking for interested faces. They're looking for people who are actively asking questions and thinking. That's what they want. Those are the mark of a professional. Those are the mark of someone who has spent 10,000 hours or more, that 40 hours a week for 5 years, investing in their life. Because make no mistake, folks, that's what it is. It's an investment in you and your life. Just like we were talking about in the last episode, where we were talking about the investment in equipment and how to go about investing in equipment. This is an investment in you. This is an investment in your livelihood, in your future, in your career. And the day that you start to see it as more of a career instead of a hobby, the day you start seeing it as more of a career than a job, you will start to take more of a vested interest in it. I guarantee you. There's no doubt in my mind. And that's what happened to me. That's what happened to most people I know. One day it just clicked and it was like, hey man, wait a minute. This is a whole lot more than what I just do. It is who I am. And once you realize that, you're living in a world all your own and nobody can stop you. And that's quite literal. That is, I hate to be esoteric about it, but it's so true. Once you are devoted to yourself and to your success and what you want to do, that will show. That professionalism, that go get 'em attitude, that connection and conviction to purpose in your life will exude and show through in everything that you do, in your excitement, in your job, on the job site, with the people that you work with and the work that you do. So keep yourselves up, keep yourselves working, keep yourself. Even today while I was editing, my wife was like, oh, wow, what? Did you just say that you learned something? And I was like, yes, yes. If I don't learn something every gig, I'm failing myself. If I don't learn something in every editing process that I do, I have failed myself. I am not growing. I'm stagnant and just going, paddling in circles, checking out where I am instead of moving forward. So move forward, folks. Get the paddles moving on the left and the right, not just one side heavy. All right. Make sure that you're going in a straight line to the destination that you want to be in professionally. Get those 10,000 hours in. Get that 5 years at 40 hours a week. Make yourself a professional. Remember, the first part of professional is pro. That means positive, good, moving towards something, all right? So be a pro at it. Be good at it, all right? And hey, until next time, everybody, please, while you're online checking out this episode, check out our other episodes on YouTube. Check out our other episodes on the website. You can go. There's episodes from season one, season two, season three. They're all up there. They're all free. Check them all out. You can download the audio from each episode. You can visit us on Spreaker. There's all kinds of technical articles in the tech article area, as well as far as I know right now, the only freelance AV directory existing on the internet in the United States, where you can actually go in and find freelance companies to work for in your local area, hover over the region, click on it. It'll take you to the states. Click on the state. You'll see the city. You'll see the companies in the city. If you see a region, state, or city that does not have companies that you know about, let us know, everybody. Pay it forward. Help other techs get jobs. All right. Remember, we've all moved somewhere new in this industry. We've all been somewhere where we've had to lay the first layer of mortar and start putting new bricks down. So that's what it's about. Techs helping techs, geeks helping geeks, nerds helping nerds in this industry. So please, please, please do that. If you see something, go on to the widget on the right-hand side, contact us. Let us know the city, state, region, and the business that you would like listed. We do it for absolutely free. It costs nothing to be listed on our freelance AV directory. So if you're a company that's looking for AV techs, let us know and we will list you for free. On that note, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of your careers, take care of your professional attitudes. Most of all, take care of your hearing and eyesight. Make sure to see the doctor regularly about that stuff. It is the lifeblood of your industry. It is the lifeblood of your career. And remember, I'm Chris Jordan, your host. This is the Talking Sound Podcast, coming to you live from Austin, Texas. Until next time, everybody, keep reaching for 11. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.